John Neeters, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. And thank you for tuning in. I know we've got some people out there that have listened to almost every show for the last, gosh, many, many years, 7 years, I think. And I love it, and I get some great emails, some great feedback from people. So that's very fantastic. So I want to talk about a couple of upcoming dates. The biggest thing that's on the horizon for us here at Alameda Acupuncture is, and the balancing point, is that I will be doing a lecture at the New Living Expo at noon on Sunday the 28th. So that's noon on Sunday the 28th. I will be doing a talk at the New Living Expo, and it will be on brain health and dementia prevention. And I find this is the number one thing that most of my patients who are over 30 come in with concerns about. They have friends or loved ones, or they're reading a lot about the dangers and the horrors in our population, and they have personal friends with dementia or with Alzheimer's, which is a variation of dementia, and the one that we tend to know the most about or be the most familiar with. And there's a lot of fear, a tremendous amount of fear. Now, one of the problems with that is that fear will cause releases of stress hormones that make the development of dementia even a little bit more likely. So we certainly want to get rid of the fear. However, a healthy concern is in order because of the huge increases, tremendous increases in the number of Alzheimer's cases. I mean, when you look at the numbers, it's staggering in terms of people, in terms of cost, in terms of resources of our medical system being expended. So it's really a big issue. Again, this is John Neeters, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. You're listening to The Balancing Point. So let's go ahead and take a telephone call. Good morning. This is Dr. Neeters.
Good morning, John. It's Ken.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for letting me know that the word's getting out there.
That's right. I thought I'd better give you a call.
Yeah.
Boring week, huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like my dear nephew drove in last night. He was on his way through, and they got in around 11 o'clock. And he said, have you seen the news about X? And my wife said, no. Have you seen the news about Y? And my wife said, because she's been in finals.
Okay.
And once she goes into finals mode, it's like she does everything she can to eliminate the external world. And he started rattling off these events. And it was only when he started to kind of ask about them that I thought, oh, my God, what a week. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so like you and she were basically insulated from it. You're only finding out about it now, so wow.
Yeah, well, she more than I. I am always tasting what's happening out.
I
will touch into it. Like my day, you know, I'm old, so I still get a paper newspaper. And that's how I start my day, with a cup of loving goodness from the gods in the form of tea. I'll have a cup of tea and sit with my newspaper. I always start with the sports page, because it's total fantasy. It's like a soap opera. You know, you can put all of your attention in it, but at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and I grew up playing sports, so it's a language that I understand, right? So it's fun for me. And then I'll start working from the inside of the paper toward the front section. And it's only after my body's a little bit present that I will look at the front page. And then I sample into it. I see what's happening, but I really don't become emotionally invested in it because it's such a roller coaster.
Right.
And not to be trusted. So,
yeah. There is that. What do you recommend for people who might be a bit frazzled from the last week?
Well, that's a great, great question. Number one, and, you know, I try to be as unbiased as possible, but everybody has a frame they look through. I really wish everybody would get into their favorite acupuncturist, and if they don't have one, find one and get a treatment. I spent this week, about half of my patients, no matter what they thought they were coming in for, I did a treatment called a celestial tuning fork, or some derivation on that, which is really to get them back into their body so their body's kind of vibrating in a harmonious way. And when I say that, it sounds kind of airy-fairy, but it's not at all when you see what happens to people's bodies. And also when you remember that our body is 99.99% energy. I mean, that's what we are, with a little matter thrown in. So if we can get, and what happens is, to use a very technical term, we get discombobulated.
You know, very technical.
The signals aren't going properly. People feel like their energy is running sideways rather than north and south. And after about 35 to 45 minutes on the table, they get blissful again. And that can save them days and weeks of agony. So that would be the number one thing. I would recommend that people try to get in and get some acupuncture. Also, then we know that being in nature de-stresses us in many ways, some of which we know and we can scientifically prove, some of which we know from experience, and some we probably don't even know. And one of my teachers who did pranic healing was really big on hugging trees and getting the energy of the tree. And this is a great time to do that.
Walking around barefoot might not be a bad idea.
Absolutely. And just let your feet kind of drift down into the soil around some of these trees, like maybe take a walk up in Tilden Park or get over to one of the, like, the Marin and some Mount Tamalpais, things like that. It doesn't even have to be a whole day trip. Just take an hour to go up to into the Oakland Hills or 3 or 4 hours to go to Mount Tam and let yourself be breathed by these giants. You know, they seem happy to include me whenever I go. I've never felt excluded.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and the... You know, you can feel the shift, I mean, physiologically, but also my head starts to clear. So that would be a big, big plus, is just to get out and ground out, like you said, get your shoes off, get away from as many electromagnetic frequencies as you can. You're still going to be surrounded by them, but if you can cut it by three quarters, that's great. And get around the trees and let them breathe. I mean, trees, the respiratory rate is huge, the amount of oxygen that they give off. I talked on the show last year about a study done in Japan that really kind of surprised me. It's one of those things you kind of know it's true, but when you see the science, it's still a little surprising. And they took groups of patients who were suffering from immune deficiencies, and they took them out into the forest for different periods of time, and they found that in most cases, the number of immune cells doubled over about a three-day period.
Wow.
I mean, this huge increase. And they actually, it was very interesting. My assumption is, mostly, and has been, that it's from the electromagnetic fields and from the increase in oxygenation, which you get. I mean, plants breathe in carbon dioxide and give off oxygen, which is the opposite of what we do. So it makes a perfect system. But they actually found particular chemicals in the bark of some of the trees, and many of the trees actually, that help stimulate the immune systems. So I thought that was pretty cool. So get to an acupuncturist if you have the opportunity or make the opportunity. I'm going to go see someone who does great healing this morning because my world is very intense and from many directions, and I'm going to spend an hour, which is, you know, more than I usually do, but I'm going to spend an hour letting someone that's a healer work with me.
Oh,
and
what modality? Or
I don't want to go into it too much. Just kind of a cleansing modality. You know, just working with me to cleanse, to kind of get things.
Okay.
We got a high pitched sound there going on in my system, and so just to kind of get things moving. Then the third thing is do those, and then touch. There's nothing like human touch. As I said before, one of my teachers said, 8 hugs a day, no less.
Uh-huh.
And so finding someone you love and touching their feet, touching their hands, massaging their hands, just doesn't have to be anything sophisticated, just getting that touch, which, of course, dramatically changes energy flow. If you take babies that are upset, often just a very light touch for 2 minutes, and they're gone. They're sound asleep. It's such a profound thing. So those are a few things I would recommend. And, of course, eating lightly and eating and drinking as gently for your body as you can, vegetable juices, some fruit juices, to just gently stimulate the lymphatic system and to stimulate the digestive system in a very gentle way without overloading it. The other thing, a little lymphatic massage, either on yourself or by another, would be good, just to get the lymph flowing a little bit to cleanse us out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Guy. Have a good day, and I hope everybody else gets a little less frazzled out there.
Yeah, I would be. Boy, me too. I saw a couple people on the way to work. It's like make very, what looked to me like really poor and strange decisions in traffic, you know, like flipping U-turns in the middle of a busy intersection, just from that intensity. You know, it's a Saturday morning, but they had to save that 30 seconds, you know,
right,
by flipping a U-turn. So, yeah, hopefully we can get the world to defrazzle a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you, Kent.
Thank
Always
you.
Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
You know, talking to Kent there, it reminds me of something that Marilyn Allen had communicated. And Marilyn is the, I don't know what her position is, I think president, but she's very active with the largest malpractice insurance carrier in the United States for acupuncture. And she had made us guess what the condition that acupuncture was used to treat. And most everybody guessed pain and orthopedics, which has been the case. Fertility has been really making big inroads, and a lot of people guess that. And she said, no, the number one thing treated by acupuncture in the United States, because she gets to see all these soap notes, all of these notes from doctors. She said, no, the number one thing treated is anxiety. Anxiety. And it's because acupuncture is so phenomenal at treating anxiety. Now, one of the problems with anxiety is that many anxious people don't know that they are. By the time most people realize they're anxious, they're having a panic attack, which is an extreme, really very extreme manifestation of anxiety. And you want to catch it long before a panic attack. So acupuncture, just brilliant, brilliant at working with anxiety. So if you feel anxious, if you're concerned over world events, go to your acupuncturist, plug in with those needles, tune out with those needles, and you're going to wake up 40, 45 minutes later with a completely different view on what's happening and a much brighter outlook. And when I say brighter, I mean that actually when my patients walk outside, they're stunned often at how bright the world is and how dramatically things have shifted as their awareness has shifted, of course. So, yeah, take care of yourself this weekend. This is a very frantic time, you know, and the problems of the world are certainly no worse this week than they have been in many other weeks. I mean, really, you know, please don't, you know, stone me for saying this, but this is actually a mild week in many ways when you look at the atrocities and the horrors that occur on a daily basis throughout the world. We are blessed with a hyper-responsive reporting system. And it was just the news media, which was hyper-responsive. You know, something that would happen in the swamps of Florida, you'd see on the big television screen as though it was happening next door. You know, you'd see these people running around frantically. So it's grossly, grossly overplayed. I mean, I can't even touch on how grossly overplayed it is. And now we multiply that with the internet, which you can get things out virally in seconds. And then Twitter, my God, people tweeting about events, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 tweets going out within minutes of events. So we are inundated. So you must unplug. Now, a lot of the people that are listening to me are not kids. I do get some kids listening, and I love that. But mostly, you're not. I'm sorry. But you're around kids. You're around younger people who are so habitually tuned in that they don't even understand what it means to tune out. They have computers and iPads and iPhones and other phones, and they're tweeting and they're instant messaging to the point where this happens all day and all night. And that has never proven to be healthy. The human brain and the human nervous system was not designed for that. We were designed to have long periods, very long periods, of zero stimulation. You know, people lived in caves. People lived in huts with no light, none whatsoever. And they would stay indoors for 12 to 14 hours a day with no stimulation. And that is how our nervous system evolved. So the level of stimulation we have now cannot be good. Now, it actually does do some beneficial things. I don't mean to put it down completely. It actually is creating new neural responses in the brain. It's creating new possibilities and intelligence, etc. But in terms of the neurological and endocrinological systems, it's creating gross overload. So let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. This is Dr.
Hi, John. It's Eric.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
How are you? Good. Well, that reminded me, I'm not a big Castaneda fan, but I liked his term, stop the world.
Tell me about it. Doing work around Castaneda type of work, right, is where all of the significant transformations in my life occurred. All of them.
Yep.
And it wasn't Castaneda, and it wasn't that, but it was when I read his works, it is exactly, precisely, in most cases, the work that I was doing. We just called it something else, right?
Yeah.
But stopping the world is so critical. The other one, and I don't even talk to my patients about this because it takes too much work. I don't mean too much work by me, but it's so difficult, is to the idea of giving up personal history. Because most of us are so locked into our personal history, there's no possibility of anything being different going forward. But yeah, there are so many terms in those books that are just the mood of a warrior. I discussed that many times in many different terms with even people who do internships with me. You must develop the mood of the warrior if you're going to work with patients effectively.
Yeah.
But stopping the world, thank you for bringing that up. That's great.
Yeah. Well, okay, back to medicine.
Exactly. That's all medicine.
Oh, I guess it is.
Yeah, think of it. What stopped my migraines, right? I had horrible migraines in my late 20s, early 30s. And, you know, I made some changes, but it was really around those areas of stopping the world so that my brain could cease the activity that was creating the migraines. It was really around that my entire health changed, my entire sense of well-being changed, was in that work. So to me, that is a key element in health.
Yeah.
There's a great book. I gave it to a patient of mine who was dying a few months ago, and it made she said it had an incredibly profound effect on her. And she died very peacefully, which was the goal. And it's called How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, How a Zen Buddhist Approaches Death. And it's an abbess from Shasta, who founded Shasta Abbey, G.U. Kennett. And it was her, when she was given the diagnosis that she was going to die from this terminal illness, how she turned into that and approached it. And all of the transformation that she thought had occurred for her and how far she thought she had gone in this road, so to speak, of freedom and surrender, she realized, oh my God, I just was touching the outer kind of work of it. And this book really highlights her surrender into reality, I'm going to call it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book. But again, same type of thing. And out of that, healing occurs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Lester Levinson, the fellow that founded what's now called the Sedona Method, and he was given a diagnosis that he was going to die in a few months, so he locked himself up in his apartment and started doing what I would call pure contemplation, and he didn't die, at least not for a long time, because at some point in the clarity of being, the illness resolved. So to me, this is part of the healing process, really.
You're right. Yeah.
But anyway, let's go to more physical stuff.
More physical, that's right. Well, I just had a friend now that was getting kidney stones, and he said that they told him it was a case of too much vitamin D. Is that at all possible?
Yeah. However, I'm now... I'm sorry. It's so trippy to me how how medicine, biomedicine comes in waves. Vitamin D is unnecessary. Vitamin D is critical. Oh, vitamin D is dangerous, you know? And it's like every few months, and it's like lemmings going over the cliff. You know, there'll be one small article, and then everybody jumps on board. And important to remember, I don't know, I had seen over 3,000 articles on vitamin D several years ago. There must be tens of thousands now, I'm guessing, at least 10,000 studies done on vitamin D. And the problem with vitamin D, potentially, is how you combine it. It's like anything. If you have too much vitamin D, and you have certain conditions, and you have too much calcium in the body, it is, of course, possible that the calcium doesn't know where to go, and it gets deposited as stones. If that's the case, that's an if, that's the case, then it's only one of a dozen other factors, including dehydration. Because if there's enough hydration, if you're getting enough fluids through the kidneys, it's hard for that calcium to build up. Because, again, the issue is that calcium, the proper name for vitamin D3 is cholecalciferol, and that means the carrier of calcium. So it is carrying calcium to different parts of the body. And there's a dance between vitamin D, and again, I'm using that term very generically because vitamin D goes through many processes where it has different chemical qualities, and the dance between vitamin D, parathyroid hormone, calcium, vitamin K, and a variety of other factors, some of which we know and some of which we probably don't even know yet. And that determines how much of the calcium gets pulled out of the bones and gets into the bloodstream and then may get deposited somewhere else. Now, one of the big factors is stress. If we're not under stress, then the body tends to deposit the calcium into the bones, right? That's its, you know, it's going into the bones. Under stress, the body will pull the calcium out of the bones as a buffer against the acid problems, the acid buildup that come with stress, because most of the stress hormones will burn tissue, and that will give off certain types of acids like lactic acid, for example. If we eat a lot of meat, we get a lot of phosphoric acid. And so in order to protect us, the body pulls calcium out as a buffer to keep our blood pH, our blood chemistry, acid-base balance, in the proper ranges. Okay, now it's possible when that calcium gets pulled out of the bones and there's too much of it that the body might go through the kidneys and get deposited in the kidneys. That's very possible. However, calcium by itself, as far as I know, I could be wrong, doesn't get deposited in the kidneys that way. It either gets deposited as calcium urate or calcium oxalate. So there is some problem in either urate or oxalate metabolism that also accompanies the vitamin D. So if you have a bunch of problems, all right, you have a bunch of genetic problems, a bunch of lifestyle problems, and you have high levels of vitamin D, it indeed does seem to increase the risk of kidney stones. On the other hand, having proper levels of vitamin D has been conclusively proven to lower risks from at least 15 different cancers directly, and most of the neurodegenerative diseases we know. It lowers diabetes risk, cardiovascular disease risk, etc. So again, you got to look at the balance here, right? On one hand, it prevents or it lowers the likelihood of almost every serious horrific disease we know, and on the other hand, it increases the risk of kidney stones a blip. Now, I'm not going to be too worried about that. What I'm going to do is try to keep my calcium levels at a proper amount without taking calcium tablets. Again, if someone takes calcium with vitamin D, that is a problem, huge problem. So you should never take calcium and vitamin D. And the people that most prescribe that, ding, 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 medical doctors. You didn't catch me giving people calcium with vitamin D. In fact, I didn't even carry calcium in my clinic except in very small amounts in a few other supplements, because this should have been known decades ago. But doctors have traditionally, over the last 20 years, or consistently is a better word, given patients calcium. And so, and then when vitamin D studies hit the market, they started giving them vitamin D and didn't shut off the calcium. So get dietary calcium, get vitamin D from the sunshine, and there's no problem. If you need to get vitamin D from a capsule, then make sure you hydrate really, really well and don't take it near high calcium intake times, and try to stay as unstressed as you can, and you lower your risk of dying. And there was a French study that showed the risk of death from all causes goes down by 7% in people with moderate vitamin D intake. But yes, it is true that one can increase their likelihood of developing kidney stones if they take too much vitamin D.
I don't think you're taking too much vitamin D, but anyway, kind of dehydration maybe, but
We know in countries, in warmer countries, particularly like desert countries, the air Arab countries, et cetera, that the rate of kidney stones goes up dramatically, both in the indigenous population and when other people go there, like the British, when they went there and they were colonizing, their rate of kidney stones went up dramatically, much, much, much higher, because they were dehydrated and the kidneys dried up, and so that those calcium crystals tended to form and not get washed out.
That kind of reminds me. Is the test that they give you in the hospital for dehydration, is that a good enough reading?
Yeah, it's fine. I just wish they would treat people more often for dehydration.
Yeah.
I, by the way, passed another kidney stone recently, one that I'd forgotten I had. It was in the other kidney. It was in my good kidney. And it was miserable, of course.
Yeah.
And my buddy came by to offer me assistance, who's an acupuncturist, lives down south in Salinas, but he came by and offered me a few supplements and things to kind of help me along, but I was doing well. And he said the thing that was magical for him with his kidney stones is they put 4 bags of fluid into him. That's a lot of fluid, because he couldn't get enough by mouth. 4 bags of fluid into him, and that really helped dislodge the kidney stones. In China, you can go in, I mentioned this a couple times, walking by this one big open room, you know, with chairs and TVs, glassed in walls, and there were like 100 people sitting there, probably not 100, but quite a few, with IV lines to drips, saline and water drips and stuff. And I said, "Is that a cancer ward?" And my translator looked at me like, "No, are you crazy? Why would you think that?" I said, "Well, in the U.S., when you see that kind of thing, it's usually, you know, people getting their drugs." And she said, "No, it's a... they just came in because they were dehydrated, and it's a hot day." And so they just come in, check into the hospital, they routinely get filled up with solution, and it's like 50 cents. If that happens here, you got a minimum of $2,000 if you go to your emergency room and you're dehydrated.
Yeah.
God, it's crazy. And so sometimes you just can't get enough fluid by mouth if you're out and it's too hot. It would be nice to get in and just get a bag.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. That doesn't do as well as by mouth. That's interesting. Yeah. Now, kidney stones, I guess they don't dissolve, huh?
They can dissolve. We actually have supplements to dissolve them. I would have dissolved this one. I may have dissolved it a little bit because I was working on the other ones. Again, the two that I had the lithotripsy on were just too big. They were over an inch. You know, the doctor was stunned. I mean, these are golf ball size, practically, stones that I had in my left kidney. They'd been there for decades. But they say they told me, I don't remember, that I had them telling me that I had a smaller one, much smaller, in my right kidney. And so I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it, but I was doing herbs to make sure that I was dissolving stuff in the left one. So I suspect what happened is the stone that I had in my right kidney, we dissolved enough, probably to about half the size that it was able to pass okay. So we do that a lot.
Do okay.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of great studies on it. I have lots of clinical evidence where I have doctors will actually send their patients to me now, or the patients will come in with their doctor's approval, and they'll bring me the film studies, and we can see the stone there, and they'll go back in a few months, and the stone's gone or much smaller. So not good science, but great clinical case studies.
There's no pain unless you try to...
Generally, if the stone is large enough, and this is what happened in my left kidney, if the stone's large enough, it can fall into and block the opening from the kidney into the ureter. And the ureter is what connects the kidney to the bladder, so the urine goes through there. And so if that gets stuck there in that opening, the pelvis of the kidney, then it will block the flow of urine, and the kidney will start to swell, which is excruciating, because the kidney is the organ that has kind of a hard outer shell to it, semi-hard, and so it's not very flexible. And as it starts to swell, it really hurts, trust me. And so it can be still in the kidney and still cause a lot of pain. That is more of a pressure-type intense pain in the kidney area. Once the stone starts to pass, then you'll feel a very different kind of pain, one they call colicky. So it kind of comes and goes. It's a spastic pain. So as the ureter, that tube, which has smooth muscle around it, as it contracts and spasms, then it contracts around the stone and it hurts like heck, and then it'll let up and then it'll spasm. And the way we treat that is by kind of taking over from the spasm. We will do electroacupuncture, and we'll do, or I will do at least, I should say, a alternating frequency. I might do 4 seconds at a very low frequency, 2 to 4 hertz, and 4 seconds at a very high frequency. So depending on the machine I have, it may go to 200 hertz, or I have one that goes to 1,000, and I'll set it at the highest setting. And what that does is during that slow tap, 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 it tends to get the ureter to relax and go out of spasm. And during the high frequency, the zzz, it tends to get it to contract again. And so instead of getting this erratic kind of everything spasming in an erratic way, it starts to take over and retrain the ureter so that it's going contract, relax, contract, relax. And we've had extremely good fortune. I can't think of anybody. I had a woman pass a pretty good stone last week. We had to work on her about, I think, 3 times. Typically, 1 or 2 sessions will get the stone to pass through the ureter. And it's not pleasant while it's happening, but we can speed it up by quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting.
So while it's in the kidney, we try to shrink it. When it gets out of the kidney, we give herbs that relax the ureter, and Western medicine has drugs to kind of relax the ureter also, and then we do electroacupuncture to get a rhythmic movement, kind of a squeezing rhythmic movement to get the stone to move through.
Sounds
and you know, the one of the hard parts is there are 2 main types of stones, one formed from uric acid and calcium and one formed from oxalates and calcium, and the oxalate is much more common. And it's easy to kind of tell people, look, you need to change your diet when it's the uric acid stone, because that's the same thing that basically causes gout, the same types of things, rich organ meats, beer, sweets, all those things, certain seafoods and things like caviar would do it, will tend to form, the body doesn't metabolize it properly, the purine system, and you form high levels of uric acid. And it's really easy to give people a diet for that and say, don't eat these foods. Well, unfortunately, the oxalic acid is really a lot of green vegetables and things that we associate as being really good for us. And I'm sure I developed mine when I was a vegan, and I was eating huge amounts of spinach, chard, and cheese. And that is the perfect recipe for calcium oxalate, the calcium from the cheese and the oxalic acid from the greens. And so I would eat that, and I would go do martial arts where I wouldn't drink for hours because I didn't want to have to pee, so I would get really dehydrated. And I'm sure that's when I formed these gigantic stones.
Yeah.
But it's harder because it's a lot of vegetarian and really otherwise really, really good foods. There is a test called LithoLink, where they will do a 24-hour urine collection, and they can kind of point you in the direction of which types of stones you might be prone to create.
Uh-huh. Well, that's very interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you one other question. It used to be very popular kind of mentioning the evening primrose oil.
Mm-hmm.
And those type of oils, but I don't hear much about them. What are they? Are they still valuable, or what?
Oh, yeah, they are.
Or what?
It's like everything. And it's interesting with fads, for example, right? Like vitamin D, doctors say, oh, that's a fad. You know, it's a fad.
Yeah.
Well, if you go back into the old Chinese writings from a couple thousand years ago, they'd say, go out in the sun 15 minutes a day, no more, no less.
Yeah.
Why? Because you're going to get vitamin D. So they didn't know vitamin D, but, right, it's a fad. It's the weirdest thing. You know, since the 50s, Fred Apperly was doing studies showing the benefits of sun, and or at least proximity to the equator, in the prevention of many diseases, right? Chronic diseases.
Right.
But that's a fad. And so wheat, you know, that's a fad. Don't eat wheat. Really. My hero, Li Dongyan, was telling people in 1250 AD that had certain conditions, which he called yin fire, but we would now call metabolic syndrome X, celiac disease, etc. He would tell them, don't eat wheat. Okay, that was 750 years ago. We go back to the Bible, and, you know, we have Ezekiel bread, which is essentially based on the same ideas. That's, you know, a couple thousand years old at least. And so we see these are not new ideas. These are absolutely not new ideas. They are just, we have different science for them now. And this whole idea of fads is kind of a little fascinating to me. But actually, I forgot the particular thing you were talking about.
Evening
primrose.
Evening primrose.
Yep, evening primrose has been consumed for a very long time. Again, I don't know how long, but a long time. Evening primrose oil is an omega-6 fatty acid. And so these got very popular because they were really good oils for many things. And then we started to look at omega-3 fatty acids, and we said, oh, if omega-3s are the real good thing, and omega-6s are really bad. And so omega-6s amongst kind of the general population fell out of favor because people didn't really understand what the issues were. So evening primrose oil, here's one of the problems. Without getting too technical here. Okay, so there are three really significant groups of what are called prostaglandins that are formed and created out of eating certain foods. Prostaglandins E1, E2, and E3. E3s are typically from the omega-3 fatty acids. E1s are typically from the good quality omega-6 fatty acids. Okay, evening primrose oil, borage oil, black currant oil, right? Those types of things. Actually, you know what? That's not quite right. Let me back up. Here's the bottom line. The number, like omega something, omega-3, omega-6, is a method of counting in this long chain of hydrocarbons where is the first time in this chain that it is not fully saturated, meaning where is the first place where it's bendable and also could oxidize. And so there is a group of prostaglandin E2s called arachidonic acid. Arachidonic acid is very inflammatory. It is horrible for the body. It leads to arterial inflammation. It leads to rheumatoid arthritis. It leads to cardiovascular disease. Now, arachidonic acid is typically formed from eating poor quality meat. It is also possible to form that from getting too high a level of these omega-6 fatty acids, like from evening primrose and borage oil. But you have to get a fair amount. Here's the bottom line. If you're taking an omega-6 fatty acid, good quality, that's probably a great thing. You just need to make sure you have plenty of omega-3 fatty acids to balance it out. Okay? So if someone's going to add a gram of omega-6, like evening primrose oil, I wanted them to add at least a gram of omega-3 fatty acids, as in, say, in a fish oil, or maybe 2 grams. And that'll keep the balance right. But the omega-6s, like particularly evening primrose oil, which is one of my favorite, and this stuff grows everywhere, it contains very high levels of GLA, or gamma-linolenic acid. This is an essential fatty acid, and it's required for the body for growth and development, and you have to get it from the diet. The body doesn't make it on its own. And this was a folk remedy in the early 1900s, used by physicians, and it has tremendous, tremendous benefits. And in terms of science, we know that it benefits eczema. It's useful for rheumatoid arthritis and also for breast pain. Now, those studies mostly were fairly small because there's not enough money to do large-scale studies. And the number one thing I use evening primrose oil is for eczema, particularly childhood eczema. I found it the single best thing to relieve that. So I'll have parents cut open evening primrose oil capsules and just load it up on the actual eczema itself and keep doing that as often as possible. And I'll have the kids take a lot of evening primrose oil internally, sometimes up to 10 grams a day. And I can't remember a case of eczema that did not resolve as long as the parents followed the dietary guidelines for a while. Also, I have not found a case that didn't respond to that. It's incredibly effective. Now, as I said, if I'm going to have a kid go up that much in the evening primrose, I mean, at least give them a little bump in the omega-3s to balance it. And their skin just completely clears up. The other place I will use it is for women's health, breast pain, PMS. I use it. I see it used for menopause. I don't clinically see a lot of benefit for that, but I'm okay if my patients use it. But for PMS, it's very, very helpful. And again, I would add a little omega-3 with it at the same time.
So it is anti-inflammatory too.
It is. Yeah. And again, it kind of got some circles get a bad rap because it can convert, at least by my understanding, to those prostaglandin E2s with arachidonic acid. And so that's why you need to keep good levels of omega-3 fatty acids also. But it's like meat. Meat got a bad name, mostly because people were eating bad quality meat, which had massive amounts of arachidonic acid, or helped create massive amounts of arachidonic acid, and was incredibly inflammatory. Totally different if one were to eat free-range beef versus, you know, feedlot-fed. You always want to balance it a little bit. Now, there are other studies on black currant and some of the other seeds that are really rich in that, borage oil, et cetera, and they each have slightly different qualities. But evening primrose is the one that I use the most of the oils in that category. Bob Flaws did a really nice write-up a few years ago, and if I can find it, I'll maybe read part of it into the air, on the air sometime. Again, borage also, very, very good medicine, actually, and it's been used in traditional medicine for respiratory problems, cardiovascular problems, and a lot for GI stuff. Again, it's good for PMS. I find it's a little bit better for menopausal symptoms than evening primrose oil for reasons I have no idea why. I do not know why one's more effective for one than the other. But also, borage oil actually has some anti-amoebic properties also. So again, they have a big overlap in things that they treat, and then each one has a little bit different specifics.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, good to hear from you again.
Yep. Take care. See
you. All right. Bye-bye. All right. Cool. Any new listeners out there? Anybody that's never called in before? Come on. Don't be shy. Don't be shy. Was that a caller coming in? No? Okay. Yeah, good. Let's take a call. Hello?
Good morning, Dr. Neeters.
Hi there.
Hi. I know so many people this week that have had seasonal allergy problems.
Oh, my God, me too.
I'm just wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about something you would do for immediate relief, and then maybe what you think about long-term things such as honey or bee pollen, well, things like that.
The honey and bee pollen, you mentioned those as long-term, but I would see those as medium-term myself.
Uh-huh.
You know, we do some really fun diagrams now with our patients trying to communicate ever more efficiently, I'll say. In Western medicine, for example, all treatments that I have seen for allergies and for almost all other conditions are only symptomatic. Now we know that, and we kind of accept it. And one of the things that bothers me about Chinese medicine, the way it's practiced, is although everyone says, and in school we're taught, you don't treat symptoms, you really treat the root of the illness, I find that most acupuncturists, and including myself at times, get pulled into the trap of treating symptoms. Patients come in and say, I have a headache. Okay, George, let's get rid of your headache. A headache is always a symptom. Always. It is never the root of the problem. There is always one or typically many underlying problems. And of course, when we treat the symptom only, that's great. You know, get someone out of misery is fine. I love it. That's my job. However, we really do a tremendous disservice if we don't tell our patients and communicate to them in a way they can hear it that isn't the real problem. And indeed, before a headache shows up, we have to be severely out of balance. It's not a minor imbalance. We have like 30, 40 years of buildup of imbalance, and then suddenly someone starts getting cluster headaches or they get migraines or whatever it is. And that's not minor. And it's the same with allergies. Well, you know, there are so many factors that go into a hypersensitivity or allergy response. And on the deeper levels, it mostly comes down to hormonal problems. Again, we're looking at adrenal, thyroid type things, but other problems also. And then above that, so I'm kind of going to the deeper levels, that's the real underlying problem, because the adrenals put out hormones that are supposed to stop us from having allergies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what do people do if they have really severe allergies? They go in and get corticosteroids. Mm-hmm. Well, where do we get the idea of corticosteroids? Voila, the adrenal glands give off corticosteroids. We have the hormones in our body, if we're healthy, to put out the fire of the allergy. And we should be able to do that. Now, the allergens that we're dealing with in our environment have gotten much more prolific and much stronger. We know that the ragweeds in the cities now give off 500 times the pollens as some of their rural relatives. So there's a big difference, right? So it's very problematic. Mm-hmm. But really, the problem is in ourselves, right? The problem is our body. It isn't so much the external allergen. Now, this year is particularly nasty, and to be honest with you, I haven't taken the time to do the research into why. I'm seeing more eye problems, more itchy eyes, puffy eyes, than I've ever seen in my practice. I'm not seeing quite as many phlegm, deep phlegmy problems, but I'm seeing massive amounts of eye stuff. I have probably 20 patients over the last 2 weeks who've never had an allergy that they're aware of in their life. And suddenly they're walking and going, oh, my God, I can't see. Oh. So there's something, and this came with this weird weather pattern that we had with the very high winds, and then we had some south winds and some north winds. It was very confused. And right at that time is when these people started coming in. So I don't know what got stirred up. I don't know if something came across the Pacific. I don't know if it came out of the Central Valley and got swirled up, but something hit us that was really nasty, because I've been flooded with those cases, again, of people that never had a problem before. So symptomatically, we can treat that. In the West, they use antihistamines. I use mast cell binders, again, like quercetin. Bromelain is very, very good for that. Nettles are good for most people. I use a combination of Chinese herbs. I have a couple of kind of go-to formulas that I use. Someone walks in, and I haven't seen them in years, and they don't have an appointment. They say, oh, my God, help me. And I'll throw them a bottle of one of these. I have something called Allerease by Blue Poppy Herbs, which is a capsule. And I have my all-time favorite, which is Magnolia Clear Sinus, from Blue Poppy Herbs, and I don't know how many hundreds of bottles I've used over the years of that formula. It's one of my real, real go-to formulas.
It's called Magnolia what?
Clear Sinus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funny. As you're talking, of course, my nose is starting to itch. So this is my second office was a one-room office behind a health food store, and one day, they said, oh, my God, can you help our friend here? She runs our other store, and she can't even function. And can you treat her? And I was kind of running out, and I said, yeah, here, give her this. And I gave her Magnolia Clear Sinus. And this was right after I was in practice. And she came back the next week and gave me the biggest hug and kiss on the cheek and said, I can't believe it. You know, I've had this problem for years. I've never been able to get rid of it. And this, I feel better than ever. And, again, it was kind of luck of the draw. It was the only sinus formula I had in my minimal herbal repertoire at that time. Now I have lots of things. And it was kind of the luck of the draw, to be honest. And that, she probably referred 50 patients to me out of that and kind of kick-started my practice. But I still use that formula. And what it does from a Western standpoint is it will help constrict the vessels, you know, the small capillaries, in the nasal, the mucosal membranes, the lining the nose. So it helps to shut down the amount of histamine that's going to get in there and stimulate that. It will reduce the secretions, and it actually desensitizes from the allergens a little bit. It's kind of a trippy little thing. So I use, in Chinese medicine, we say it unblocks the nasal congestion and disperses wind cold. So this is for commonly call an allergy. If the phlegm, if the exudate starts to turn yellow, then we would look at something else. But as long as it's this clear, runny phlegm, this would work. Now, again, I have hundreds of formulas that I use if I mix the herbs myself. But just for a quickie off the shelf, I love this. It transforms the congested fluid, so it gets the fluid moving again. And then what we say, so it's wind cold, so we have to warm. We say in Chinese medicine it warms the lung. Now, if you were looking at it from a Western action, it probably warms the sinuses. But in Chinese medicine, those are part of the lung system. And it's a fairly complex formula. I don't know how many herbs, but it's probably 15 to 18 herbs. So it's pretty complex. But the number one herb is Baizhi, B-A-I-Z-H-I. I recommend not using that as a single herb, but this is a fabulous herb, Angelica dehurica, and it's fabulous with another herb called Chang Artsa, which is xanthium. Those two herbs are kind of the cornerstones of this formula, and they're just so fabulous for this. They're kind of pungent, intense herbs. I mean, if you smell them as raw herbs, it's the kind of thing you put your nose over, take a deep whiff, and just kind of jump back in shock. They're so strong. So they're pretty trippy. So that's kind of the core of that. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to treat that as the, you know, the branch to cut down the problem. So I would probably give them something like Magnolia Clear Sinus. I would give them something to slow the mast cell explosion, something like quercetin. I would give them a vitamin C, which will help with to cool things off and with the blood cells. So that's kind of where I would start. Then I would go a little bit deeper, like you said. Some people respond very well to pollens. I don't give them because not everyone responds well. And I really like stuff that everyone responds well to.
That's like bee pollen?
Bee pollen, yeah. And for many people, bee pollen is almost magical. If you can get good local bee pollen, which you could, I'm looking at two vials of it in front of me here that one of my students, who's a beekeeper, brings in. But a few people are allergic to the bee pollen because it will have pollens in it, obviously. It's bee pollen. And so a few people don't respond well, but most, I would say, people, it really starts to help them desensitize to the allergens. So, if you're going to do that, you want to start at a very, very low dose and build up in terms of developing that desensitization. So those are kind of the mid-range things. We're going to look at what are the organ systems from a Chinese standpoint. So perhaps it's the lung system that's weak or the spleen system, which transforms and transports fluids. Maybe that's weak. And so we would work on those systems, right? So we would do then along with maybe bee pollen if they were doing it, or we would use something to stimulate the secretory IgA levels of the mucous membranes. And again, secretory IgA is that magic molecule that the body secretes on the lining of the mucous membranes that goes out and traps foreign invaders and then washes them out of our system. And over time, if we have habitual chronic conditions like allergies, that level can run very, very low. So in that case, I would do something like Epicor or one of the Chinese herbs that improves that and start to improve the actual health of the membrane and the ability to deal with the infection. So that's a little deeper level. That's kind of a secondary level. Then I would look at what the heck is going on underneath. And that could be a kidney deficiency in Chinese medicine or an adrenal insufficiency in naturopathic medicine, corticosteroid deficiency in Western medicine. The body should be able to put out those fires without relying on an external drug to do it. And it's when our adrenals become so exhausted from overuse that we can't create enough of that wonderful anti-fire compound. You know, it's like the fire extinguisher is empty, right? It's not that we don't have a fire extinguisher. It's that we don't have enough fluid in it, so we have to have the fire department come in. And that's kind of what it's like, actually. We have the fire department come in and pump us full of these drugs. And in so doing, of course, they destroy your house, right? So it's much better if you can control the fire, even if you have to resort to a fire extinguisher before the fire gets out of control. Boy, I love that metaphor. That's a really good one. Thank
that
you.
Is good.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, because once the fire department comes, they're just going to start using their axes and chopping holes and things. So then what we're going to look for there is the adrenal insufficiency. And I'll tell you, you know, I've run over time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, I love it. I love talking to you. And, hey, everybody, I'll be back next Saturday. I didn't realize we'd run over time. So thank you so much for listening in. This is John Nieters, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. See you next week. Bye-bye.
I used to think I was all alone.